closed his lips and scowled. Jerking his head for them to follow, he pushed through the double doors. It was like stepping into a dream. Kate and Emma blinked a few times, dazzled by the light, and then blinked again, hardly believing what they were seeing. 100 couples moved about the floor, turning and spinning as a 30-piece orchestra played a waltz. Kate could see the conductor, his arms waving, glancing back at the dancers like a proud parent. Some men wore tuxedos with long tails that flew out when they twirled their partners. Others were in uniforms with red and blue sashes, their chests shining with golden medals. The women were dressed in gowns embroidered with rubies, pearls, and emeralds. And everywhere Kate saw diamonds on bare necks, refracting the light from the thousands of candles that burned in the chandeliers. A servant in green livery and high white stockings passed by, carrying a tray of champagne to the older men and women who stood along the walls.
"Little birdies, wait here," Cavendish hissed. "The Countess will come when she likes."
And then Kate saw her, the golden hair shining at the dead center of the dancers. Her skin was pure white, her gown the color of blood, and the diamonds covering her throat and chest shone as if they alone gave light to the room. Her partner was an athletic, uniformed young man who had the most impressive brown whiskers Kate had ever seen. The Countess said something, and the young man stepped back and bowed. She gave a tiny curtsy in return and, holding up the hem of her dress, skipped through the couples to where the children stood beside the eagerly squirming Cavendish. The Countess's face was flushed from the warmth and exercise, and her eyes sparkled with life. They were a deep, almost violet blue, and the moment they landed on her, Kate felt as if she were the luckiest person in the world.
"You're here, my beautiful Katrina."
The Countess took Kate's hands and, before she could react, kissed her cheeks. Behind her, couples whirled about in unison, creating a dizzying backdrop.
"And how lucky you arrived in time for the ball. The creme of St. Petersburg is here. Even the Tsar is supposed to turn up later, though of course he won't, the dullard. Now tell me, my dear."
She moved closer to Kate, whispering,
"What do you think of the gentleman I was dancing with?"
The young man in question had moved off the dance floor to join two other men in uniform. He stood ramrod straight, one hand tucked in his belt and the other stroking his whiskers.
"That's Captain Alexei Markov of the 3rd Hussars," the Countess said in a conspiratorially low voice. "He is a bit too proud of his whiskers, but he's a handsome beast for all that. We'll have an affair shortly, though it won't end well."
She frowned theatrically.
"Alexei will insist on bragging about it at his club, and I'll have no choice but to slaughter him and his entire family."
Kate smiled, and as she did, she saw Emma staring at her in horror. It was like being slapped awake. She yanked her hand away from the Countess, her heart pounding. If the Countess had noticed Kate pulling her hand free, she said nothing. She was pointing with her fan to a very old man with white mutton chops who was asleep in a chair. The old man sported such an enormous collection of medals that he was listing to one side. Kate half expected the weight to drag him crashing to the floor.
"Behold, my beloved husband!" the Countess said, speaking over the orchestra. "Isn't he too revolting for words? And do you know that when I married him at 16, I was hailed as the greatest beauty in Russia? Shall we take a turn about the room?"
She started away, and Cavendish, still clutching the book to his chest, gave Kate and Emma a shove to follow.
"I admit," the Countess said, moving through the crowd, nodding to people on either side, "there were those who insisted on praising Natasha Petrovsky and her curdled milk complexion and watery cow eyes. That was before, of course, she had that awful accident with a pitcher of acid. Poor dear. I heard she died in a Hungarian asylum, mad as a hatter and raving on and on about a witch. witch. The Countess giggled, covering her mouth with her fan and giving Kate an "Aren't I bad" look.
But what was I saying? Oh, yes, my husband. When I married the Count, everyone said he had no more than 6 months to live. I don't need to tell you I didn't plan on allowing him even that long. But wasn't it just like the old mule to creak on for nearly a year? Honestly, he must have survived a half dozen of my attempts to poison him. Never marry a finicky eater, my dears. Nothing but trouble.
None of the guests appeared to notice the children. As the girls, or Michael, or the secretary, for that matter, approached, the immaculately dressed people simply moved out of the way without ever looking at them directly. The Countess gave a bright little laugh.
Finally, I went to a hag and bought a potion of bee's root, amber paste, and willow's breath. No need for him to swallow a thing. He just breathed it in as he slept, and come morning was as dead as a peasant in winter, leaving me sole mistress of the largest estate in the Tsar's realm.
She turned to them, her face glowing at the memory, and curtsied low.
The Countess Tatiana Serena Alexandra Ruskin at your service.
Kate and Emma stared at the bowed blonde head. Michael leaned forward and whispered,
"It's polite to..."
But Emma elbowed him in the ribs. Kate was thinking of the day they'd first seen the Countess at the dam, how she'd seemed almost too radiant, too beautiful, too full of life. Now Kate understood. It wasn't real. The Countess wasn't 16 or 17. In fact, if she was who she said she was, if she'd been alive when there were still czars in Russia, she could be 100 or more. Magic was keeping her young. No wonder she sometimes seemed like she was playing the part of a teenager. The Countess rose with a soft rustle of silk and gazed out over the dancers.
"Yes," she said, with philosophical weariness. "This was my world. I had wealth, position, beauty. Simpleton that I was, I thought I had actually achieved something. But I was still to learn the true meaning of power."
She clapped her lace-gloved hands, and it all disappeared. The men in uniforms and tuxedos, the women in gowns, the orchestra, the green-liveried servants, the light from the chandeliers, all gone. The children were suddenly alone with the Countess and her rat-toothed secretary in the large, silent room. Only a few candles flickered along the walls.
"Now," she said with a smile, "shall we go out onto the veranda? I'd like to take the air. And I believe you have something for me."
The Countess made Kate and Emma wait with the secretary, while Michael helped her on with a black silk wrap. Kate watched the secretary for any sign his attention was wandering, anything that would give her a chance to seize the book. She'd already whispered to Emma to be ready with the photograph. But mostly, she wished her hands would stop trembling. She'd balled them into fists, and when that didn't work, shoved them in her pockets so Emma wouldn't see. She didn't want her sister to know how terrified and truly hopeless she was. The secretary muttered something to the tiny bird on his shoulder and hugged the book even closer. Suddenly, Kate felt Emma's hand in her pocket, prying her fingers apart, sliding her small hand into hers. She looked over and saw her sister's face turned upward, her dark eyes full of trust and love. In a voice only Kate could hear, Emma said,
"It's gonna be okay."
Kate thought her heart might burst. She'd always known her sister was strong, but she was still 3 years younger, and at this moment when everything seemed so bleak, for Emma to be the one offering her strength.
"Come along," the Countess said, sweeping past them toward the door.
She led them to a stone patio off the back of the house. The night was warm, the air heavy and sweet with the smell of blooming flowers. Glass dragons of every color were strung overhead, candle flames dancing in their open mouths. A porcelain jug stood on a table at the center of the patio, and, beside the jug, a crystal carafe filled with dark liquid.
"Please," the Countess said, gesturing to the chairs. "I do love sitting outside on a summer's evening. Perhaps it's my Russian blood reminding me that winter is never far off. Do you care for lemonade? I promise it isn't poisoned."
Without waiting for an answer, the secretary began pouring, slopping a fair amount onto the table. Scared and worried as she was, Kate couldn't help thinking how familiar everything seemed. The house, the stables, this was the place where they lived, and yet they were such a long, long way from home. She stole another glance at the book under the secretary's arm. Somehow they had to get it back. Suddenly, the night was rent by a scream. Kate felt Emma's hand grip hers more tightly. The scream was far off, from somewhere deep in the woods, but there was no mistaking the source. The Countess was pouring herself a glass of whatever was in the carafe. It was a deep ruby color and oddly thick.
"Now and then women from the town attempt to reach the house, no doubt wanting to see their brats. You'd think they'd learn. They have no hope of getting past my guards."
The Countess swirled the liquid around her tiny glass.
"They are amazing creatures, the Moramkadi. They never grow tired. They know neither pain nor fear nor compassion. They are possessed solely by a hatred for every living thing."
She lifted the glass to her lips and drained it off.
"What did you call them?"
Kate asked, cursing the tremor she heard in her voice.
"Moramkadi, the deathless warriors," the Countess said. "Though I admit Screecher is a fitting name. They were men hundreds of years ago, but they traded their souls for power and eternal life, which they were granted of a sort."
"They're not so bad," Emma said. "Mostly smelly is all."
The Countess smiled indulgently.
"Aren't you a brave little liar?"
She poured herself another glass.
"They say the scream of a Moramkadi is the cry of a soul being torn asunder over and over for eternity. One is awful enough, but a thousand together on a battlefield. I've watched whole armies turn and flee."
She raised the red liquid to her lips.
"It really is quite a sight."
Kate imagined someone's mother running through the forest, her legs growing heavy, the screams drawing closer.
"Ow!"
Emma said. Kate was crushing her sister's hand. She loosened her grip, whispered,
"Sorry." "Such devotion," the Countess cooed, "but I see the truth."
She reached across the table and placed a finger on the base of Kate's throat.
"Abandoned by those dearest in the world. The wound hangs over you like a shadow, but I could make it go away. It would be so easy."
She withdrew her hand. A wispy gray tendril clung to her fingertip. She seemed to be drawing it out of the center of Kate's chest. As it pulled free, Kate gasped.
"What did you... What have I done? My sweet little cat, I've set you free. Oh, the weight you've had to bear. Can't you feel how it's worn you down little by little every day of your life? But it's gone now. All the pain and hurt, all the fear... I've taken it away. Imagine living that way always."
She was right, Kate thought. It was as if she could breathe for the first time in years.
"Say the word, and you'll never feel it again."
The tendril drifted in the air, still clinging to her fingertip. Kate thought back to her mother leaning down, telling her to watch over her brother and sister. And though the memory was there, the feeling of her mother's love, of that last kiss, was gone.
"Give it back. Are you sure, mon ange? There's a great deal of pain here. Give it back."
If holding on to that one moment meant a lifetime of pain, Kate would take it. The Countess shrugged and touched her chest. Kate felt the weight settle on her like a shroud.
"Well... shall we take a look at what you've brought me?" The secretary had been hovering a few feet away, both arms wrapped greedily around the book. Now he scurried forward and placed it in the Countess's outstretched hands. She let out a small gasp as her fingers touched the emerald cover. She was clearly trying to control herself, but still her fingers trembled as she opened it and turned the pages. After a minute and with obvious effort, she set the book aside. Kate heard her whisper, "Finally." The Countess looked at the children, her eyes glowing brighter than ever.
"Alors, mes enfants, would you like to know what it is you found?"
The Countess began by saying that to understand where the book came from, the children first had to imagine an age long past, when the worlds of magic and men were one, back before the magical world had begun to pull away, and humankind had been made to forget.
"Yeah,"
Emma interrupted rudely.
"We know all that."
"Well," the Countess continued, her voice still soft and sweet,
"the center of the magical world, the seat of the highest learning and power, was Alexandria, or Rakotis, as it was then known, where the great desert met the sea. The city was ruled by a council of wizards who traced their line back to the dim beginnings of the world. Their knowledge was ancient, primordial, passed down from master to student for thousands of years. But powerful as they were, they saw their time was ending, that the age of humans was approaching, and they feared the day they would be forgotten. You see,"
and here the Countess smiled at Kate and Emma,
"though wizards, they were also men. And like men throughout time, they could not imagine a world where they would cease to matter. So what did they do, these wise, foolish men? They wrote their secrets down. Those things said at the birth of the universe. The words spoken eons ago, in the darkness and the silence, to call everything into being. All so that they, through their knowledge, would endure."
The Countess laughed, but it was not the bright, gay laugh from before. The sound was hard, scornful.
"Their ancestors had understood. Some things are too powerful to be controlled by any one person. For this reason, the knowledge had always been divided among the council, with none knowing exactly what the others possessed. In this way, there was safety. When it was proposed that the secrets be collected, there were voices that argued against it, who said such power gathered together in one place was too dangerous, that perhaps it should be lost. But other voices won out, and thus the great magics were committed to simple paper. They were not complete ignoramuses, to be sure. They built in protections. You've seen yourself that the leaves are blank. It would take a lifetime of magical study to read and understand a single page. In addition, they established an order of guardians whose sole mission it was to protect the books."
"You mean," Kate said, "there's more than one?"
"Yes, the wizards created three great books, which they named the Books of Beginning. And they buried them in a secret vault far below the city."
"So, what happened?" Emma asked petulantly, as if she didn't care, though Kate could see she was hanging on every word. The Countess shrugged.
"What happens to every great civilization? Convinced they were the most enlightened society on Earth, they grew decadent and soft. The Council of Magicians fought among themselves and fell apart. They had been right, you see. The age of magic was waning. Finally, the city was overrun by Alexander, the first great human warlord. He burned it to the ground, and when the ashes were sifted, the books had disappeared. Everything now becomes conjecture. Some believe Alexander took the books with him, that they remained in his possession till his death, when they were stolen by his chief magician.
Others believe that the Order of Guardians, created by the wizards, spirited the books away before the siege, splitting them up and hiding them in the far corners of the earth. Others think that in the confusion of the city's fall, the books were stolen by those who had no conception of their importance, and they were passed from hand to hand through the ages. If someone did chance upon their nature, they made use of the book's power in the crudest, simplest way, as you three did when you traveled back through time. Of course, there were always rumors that this or that book had come to light, but none were ever proven. As far as I know, no one can honestly claim to have seen one of the books of beginning since Alexander marched into Rakotis more than 2,000 years ago. That is, until now. She laid her hand lightly on the cover of the book. For a few moments no one spoke. Kate wanted badly to say, "And so what?" It didn't matter to her that the book was written by a bunch of wizards a long time ago. She just needed it to get her brother and sister home. Then Michael said, "So now, will you do it?" Kate looked at him. He seemed to have grown paler as they sat there, and he was visibly sweating. His glasses kept slipping down his nose. "I mean, you've got it now, right? So you'll do what you promised?" His voice was pleading. "What's he talking about?" Emma demanded. "It's very simple, my dear," the Countess said. "I wished you and your sister to return with the book. So I made your brother an offer. In return, he agreed to lure you here and turn you over to me." Emma snorted. "You think we're going to believe that? You got him under some spell, is all." "I'm afraid not. Your brother helped me of his own free will." The Countess said this as if she was stating no more than plain fact. Kate felt a stab of ice at her heart. Emma seemed to sense it as well, for she pushed back harder than ever. "No, that's not true. Michael would never do that. Not to us. Would you, Michael?" She looked at him, imploring, but Michael just stared down at the table. "Tell them, Michael," the Countess said, her voice low but firm. "Tell your sisters." Kate held her breath. "No," she thought. "Please, let him be under a spell." Very quietly, Michael said, "It's true." "No!" Emma grabbed him by the shoulder and began to shake him roughly. "No, you're under some spell. I know it. You gotta be. You wouldn't do that to us." "Don't be too harsh with him, my dear," the Countess said. "I looked into his heart and saw the thing he desired most. He couldn't resist." Emma was crying. Large tears tumbled down her cheeks. "Shut up. You're lying. There's nothing you could give him that would make him betray us. He's our brother. You don't know anything. You're just an evil witch is all. You..." "Emma," Kate said. "No," Emma cried. "He'd never... he..." She broke off, burying her head in Kate's shoulder, sobbing. "He's our brother. He'd never... "The poor thing," the Countess cooed. "She's actually quite fragile, isn't she?" Kate glared at her. Her fear had vanished. Her whole body was suddenly consumed with a white-hot rage. She wanted to leap over the table and scream at the Countess, tell her how year after year, orphanage after orphanage, with nothing, not even a bed to call her own, Emma had never given up. She'd always fought, because she knew wherever they went, her brother and sister would be there. They were her family, the one sure thing in her life. And now the Countess had taken that away. Kate tasted salt and realized she was crying too. She wiped her tears and looked at the beautiful violet-eyed creature across the table, and made a silent promise that if she ever got the chance, she would kill her for what she'd done. "Tell them what I offered you," the Countess said. Michael was crying, and his voice hiccuped when he spoke. "She said she'd find them."
"What are you talking about?"
Emma whirled on him, still crying but furious now.
"Huh!"
She started hitting him. Michael didn't fight back or defend himself.
finds some stupid dwarf,
I hate you.
But Kate suddenly understood.
She promised she'd find Mum and Dad.
Emma stopped, one hand still balled into a fist. She was stunned, wild-eyed.
Why?
Kate pleaded.
Why would you? Because...
Michael looked up, his face a mess of tears, his nose running freely.
What if they're not coming back?
And that was it. The thing none of them had ever said. Even the air seemed to sense it and grow still. Then Kate imagined herself shouting at Michael, telling him he was wrong. She was the one their mother had promised, not him. She knew. She saw Emma staring at her with huge eyes, begging her to say something. But Michael, who for a moment had looked as shocked as his sisters, was already barreling on.
You say they are, but what if they're not? It's been 10 years. She can find them. She promised she would.
He turned to the Countess, tears still streaming down his face.
Do it. You've got the book now. You said you'd do it when you had the book. Find our Mum and Dad, please. Do it.
The Countess reached out and caressed Michael's hair.
My sweet boy, I wish I could.
But you see, I don't have the book.
She nodded to where it lay on the table.
What? What's happening to it?
Kate said. The edges were becoming fuzzy and indistinct. It was as if the book was slightly out of focus.
A funny thing about the universe, my dear cat. It respects individuality. A person or object may truly exist only once in a given moment. Multiple versions are verboten. That day you left Michael at the dam and returned to your time, there must have been a second or two when you saw yourselves. Do you remember how it felt?
Kate did. There in the underground room, watching herself and Emma and Michael, she felt a huge force pressing down on her. Then, the moment their other selves disappeared, it lifted.
Now, magic can bend those rules, the Countess said, especially magic as powerful as contained in the book. For a brief period, two copies can be made to exist at once. But sooner or later, the universe asserts itself. Ever since you arrived here, the other copy of this book, the one that already exists in this time, has been exerting its dominance.
The book was growing more and more faint. Kate felt panic rising in her.
Do something! I wish I could. Regrettably, even I can't change the laws of nature, though I am grateful. I was about to give up. 2 years I've been in this backwater, seemingly no closer to attaining my goal. But the fact that you found the book in this house, that tells me I am close. Take a good look now.
Then, before their eyes, the book faded away and vanished. There was a cracking in the sky, and a cold wind blew across the patio. A storm was coming in.
But Kate couldn't stop herself. How will we get home?
My dear,
the Countess said, her eyes shining in the candlelight.
You are home.
Chapter 8. Wolves. Two screeches appeared and yanked Kate, Emma, and Michael out of their chairs as a wall of rain swept toward the house. Kate could hear Michael protesting, shouting pleas to the Countess. They were dragged along candlelit hallways, the secretary scrambling to keep up. Emma clawed at the hand gripping her arm, yelling at the creature to let go. The screecher responded by throwing her over his shoulder, but Emma just continued to pound, albeit futilely, at its back. Kate knew there was only one place they could be heading. They stopped at a set of double doors, and the secretary pulled out a ring of keys.
Wait,
Kate began, but the doors opened, and they were thrown inside. The locks snapped into place behind them, and Kate heard the secretary's high-pitched giggle fading away down the hall. The room was silent and utterly, completely dark. Outside, rain hammered on the roof.
Suddenly there was a scrambling, a scuffling, someone grunting in pain. Emma had found Michael and thrown herself on him.
"Emma, stop it!"
With difficulty, Kate pulled her sister away, getting an elbow in the cheek in the process.
"I hate you," Emma yelled. "I wish you were dead. You're not my brother."
"No."
Kate put her face against her sister's. Emma's cheek was wet with tears.
"Don't ever say that. You hear me? Don't ever say that."
Emma let herself go limp, and Kate held her as she sobbed. Michael was sniffling on the floor. Kate knew she should go to him and comfort him, tell him she understood why he'd done it, but she couldn't bring herself to. Not yet. There was a thud a few feet away. Emma stopped crying. None of them moved. They stared into the dark, listening.
"Where are we?"
Emma whispered. In answer, the night sky ignited, and for a flickering instant, white light flashed across the room. Kate stifled a cry. 50 children were standing there, staring at them. Kate could see the rows of beds, the shadows from the barred windows stretching across the floor. Then thunder shook the house, and once again there was darkness. A voice said,
"Who's got the light?"
A scratch, the flare of a match, and then a lamp glowed in the back of the room.
"Give it here,"
the voice said, and the small globe of light passed from hand to hand, illuminating one pale face after another, till it stopped at the speaker.
"You,"
Emma said. Stephen McClattery stepped toward them, bringing the lamp near their faces. He studied them for a long moment, then said,
"Hold 'em."
The flowing mass of children swarmed around them.
"Wait,"
Kate cried as her arms were pinned at her sides.
"What are you doing?"
"He's with the Countess."
Stephen pointed at Michael.
"We seen him."
"So what?"
Emma said, kicking at the children, trying to hold her.
"We're not. He's your brother, ain't he? You're probably all in it together."
Kate saw that most of the children were young, no more than 6 or 7, their faces half savage with fear and excitement.
"He's a traitor," Stephen said. "He's helping her."
"No," Kate said. "He made a mistake, that's all."
"Still makes him a traitor. Quiet now. We got to talk."
Turning away from Kate, he began whispering to 4 or 5 boys and girls all about his age. Kate had been in enough orphanages to see children this way before. Left alone, they formed their own laws, their own societies. The secret, she knew, was not to show fear. Show fear, and they'd tear you apart. Stephen McClattery turned back around.
"We decided. We're going to hang him."
"What?"
Stephen nodded seriously.
"That's what you do with traitors. I read it in a book."
Apparently, that was good enough for the other children. They started chanting,
"Hang him! Hang him!"
"Somebody get a rope,"
Stephen McClattery said.
"We ain't got no rope,"
a voice called out.
"You could tear up some sheets," Emma said, "then tie them all together."
"Emma!"
Emma looked at Kate and shrugged, unconcerned.
"Thanks," Stephen McClattery said. "You three, tear them sheets."
3 boys stripped the sheets off a couple of beds and began trying to rip them into strips.
"You can't hang him!"
Kate was still being held by 6 hands, and to talk to Stephen she had to yell across the room. She was trying not to panic. She knew it would only feed their tempers. The mob had taken the children over.
"He made a mistake! Everyone makes mistakes! What about this?"
A girl ran forward with a velvet rope she'd pulled off one of the curtains.
"Yeah, that'll work,"
Stephen said, and with surprising deftness he quickly fashioned it into a noose.
"Bring him here, and you three stop messing with them sheets."
Michael was carried forward so that he and Stephen stood in the middle of a crowd of children.
"Hey, wait."
Emma was starting to look nervous.
"You've been found guilty, fair and square, of being a traitor," Stephen said. "You got any last words?"
Michael was crying. He mumbled something under his breath.
"What's that?"
Michael raised his head and looked at Kate and Emma.
"I said, I'm sorry."
Michael's tears glistened in the lamplight, and it seemed to Kate that he was hardly aware of the other children or what was about to happen. or if he was aware, then he didn't care. All that mattered to him was that his sisters understood.
"Well, that's fine," Stephen McClattery said, "but rules is rules."
When it came to executions, the boy was clearly all business.
"You're a traitor, and we gotta hang you."
He looped the noose over Michael's head, and the cry went up a second time, "Hang him! Hang him!" The mob began to drag Michael away. Kate knew now that she'd have to fight. She'd have to fight Stephen McClattery and beat him. If she did that, the other children would fall in line. She was about to launch herself at him when a voice spoke. It was a voice she recognized.
"For the love of all that's... nobody's getting hanged!"
Stephen swung the lamp around, and Abraham limped into the light. Behind him, Kate saw a sort of door in the wall where none had been before.
"Clear off, you hooligans," he said, pushing through the children till he could take the noose from around Michael's neck.
The children holding Kate and Emma melted away.
"Hanging! That's what you're up to now, is it?"
He cuffed Stephen lightly on the back of his head.
"Where's your sense, boy?"
"He's a traitor," Stephen said. "They're probably all traitors."
"These two ain't, I promise you that."
He gestured to Kate and Emma.
"I saw 'em nabbed by the screechers."
"Well, he is.
We can't just let him go."
Abraham took the lamp and held it up to Michael's tear-stained face.
"That he is. But listen to me, all of you."
Despite the muffling of the rain, Abraham kept his voice low.
"These are bad times. Everyone's done things that want forgiving. But we start turning on each other, and she's won. What matters is we hold together. That's all we've got in the end, each other. Remember that."
No one spoke for a few moments. Kate saw Emma bend down and pick up something from the floor. Michael's glasses. They'd been knocked off in the scuffle. Emma turned them over in her hands, then silently held them out.
"Thanks,"
Michael said, choking a little. The other children seemed to have forgotten Kate and her siblings. They were pressing around Abraham.
"What'd you bring us? What you got, Abraham?"
Kate was amazed at how quickly the hysteria had left the children. She had seen it happen before with other groups of children, but never quite so suddenly.
"Everyone settle down," Abraham said. "I want to see Annie first."
A murmur passed through the crowd, and the little girl with pigtails who'd been dangled off the edge of the dam moved to the front. Abraham knelt down. He pulled a handmade doll out of his jacket.
"I made this myself. I'd be happy if you'd take it."
The little girl accepted the doll and hugged it to her breast, not uttering a word. Abraham produced a stack of letters.
"Now, let's be quiet as I hand these out. Stephen and the others will help you young'uns read 'em."
A reverent silence fell across the room. One by one, as Abraham whispered the names on the letters, the children stepped up, received the envelopes, and carried them back to their beds. When he'd finished, Abraham came over to where Kate stood with Michael and Emma.
"The witch don't know about the secret passageways in the house, so I try and sneak in least once a week. Bring food, letters from their parents. I'm sorry about earlier, you girls getting nabbed and whatnot. I was just told to take a photo of the boy holding that help me sign. Didn't know it was some sort of trap. Anyway, I saw them monsters drag you off and I figured you'd end up here. Seems I arrived in the nick of time."
"Thank you," Kate said.
"I don't know what would have happened."
He waved his hand dismissively.
"They're good children. Just been scared for too long is all. They wouldn't have really hung your brother, most likely. Now you three, best be coming with me. The Countess has something in mind for you, and I tremble thinking what it might be." "But if you can just come and go," Emma asked, "why don't they all escape?"
Abraham gave a dry laugh.
"That's where she's smart, the witch. Keeps everyone separate. Children, mothers, fathers. Has them monsters of hers guarding them all. These young'uns know if they try and escape, their mothers and fathers will be put on the boat.
tortured, worse even.
Stephen stepped up and whispered something in Abraham's ear. He nodded.
I need to check on one that's been sick. Then we go.
He followed Stephen to a bed a few yards away. Kate felt someone tug her hand. Annie was standing there, clutching her new doll. The little girl raised her arms. Kate understood at once. Most of the children here were younger than Emma. Besides that day at the dam, they probably hadn't seen their mothers in years. That made her the next closest thing. Kate picked the girl up, and Annie wrapped her thin arms around her neck.
Kate,
Emma said. She turned. 20 small children had gathered around. They were staring at Kate and Annie with eyes of deep longing. Kate felt her heart throb with pain and wished she could comfort them all. Abraham approached with Stephen.
All right, then. Time to go. There's no telling when she'll send one of them ghouls to check on you.
Kate lowered Annie to the floor.
You leaving us?
Annie asked. Without thinking, Kate said,
I'll come back, I promise.
She don't mean it,
Stephen McClattery said.
Yes, she does.
Michael had spoken hotly, and everyone looked at him in surprise.
When my sister says something, she means it. She came for me, didn't she?
He looked at Kate and Emma.
If she says she'll come back, she will.
That's right,
Emma said.
And if any of you try and hang my brother again, you're gonna have to hang me first.
She nodded fiercely at Michael, and Kate saw it was forgiven.
Quickly now,
Abraham said, and he stepped into the passageway. Kate followed Emma and Michael through. She looked back at the ghostly faces of Annie and Stephen and the other children. Then Abraham closed the door with a soft click, and all was dark.
Hold here a moment,
Abraham whispered, and they heard him move off down the passage. The air was musty and stale, and their shoulders pressed against each other in the tight space. Kate felt Michael shudder, and when he spoke, his voice was raw.
I thought I could do something myself. You've always taken care of us, Kate. I just thought for once I could... It's okay. And I know Mum and Dad are coming back. I shouldn't have... It's okay, really.
Yeah,
Emma said.
Just don't be so stupid again.
And there, in the darkness, they sought each other's hands. Abraham returned, bringing the smell of rain and mud on his clothes.
It's clear. Now, we can't risk a light, so the going will be slow. The rain's a help, but be quiet as you can. All our lives depend on it.
He set off, Emma behind him, Michael following, and Kate bringing up the rear. The passageway was only a couple of feet wide, and Abraham would whisper back warnings to duck or step over a board or about holes to avoid. Now and then slivers of light penetrated the walls, but for the most part, Kate could only just discern the dim outline of Michael's head. Abraham guided them left, right, up a few stairs, down a couple. After 10 minutes of winding through the maze-like corridors, he paused. It had grown lighter, and they could make out each other's features. Abraham put a finger to his lips, warning them to be even quieter. It was a good thing he did, for when they turned the corner, the Countess was waiting for them. She was not in the passageway itself. Rather, she was in one of the mansion's many sitting rooms, staring through an oval window that was set into the wall that separated her room from the passage. Emma couldn't help but emit a small gasp, and Abraham immediately clamped a hand over her mouth. But it was too late. The witch had noticed them. Or had she? Seconds passed, and the Countess simply stood there, inches from the glass, calmly turning her head this way and that. Then Kate remembered she'd been in that room. There was a mirror on the wall exactly where the Countess stood. And as Kate watched, the Countess touched a hand to her hair, and, still giving no sign of having seen the children, turned and stepped away. Abraham motioned the children to come along, and they were about to follow when someone in the Countess's room began talking.
And what will my lady do now, if her poor servant may inquire?
The grey-toothed secretary was hunched at a drinks cart, pouring ice-cold vodka into a glass. The yellow bird perched atop his shoulder. Across the room, the countess reclined in a comfortable chair, her dainty feet resting on a stool.
I will make a full report. I should have done so when the children appeared the first time.
Yes, yes, of course, an indubitably intelligent course of action.
Scraping low, the man handed her the glass. The two-way mirror was on the wall directly opposite where the countess was seated. This meant the children, clustered in the passageway, had a clear view of all that transpired. It was thrilling to be so close, the more so since Kate couldn't quite believe they were invisible. Each time the countess's gaze drifted over the wall, Kate had to fight the urge to run. She was thankful for the enveloping thrum of the rain, certain that otherwise the countess and her secretary would hear her heart hammering against her chest.
"What is it, you snivelling little rodent?" the countess snapped. "I know you're thinking something."
Twisting his fingers, the man Cavendish bowed quickly 3 or 4 times.
"Just... no, impossible. Not my place to venture, no."
"Your place is to do what I tell you, you gnat. Now, what is transpiring in that putrid brain of yours?"
Alone with her secretary, the countess apparently felt no need to be charming or to act the part of the airy, gold-speckled teenager. She looked the same, certainly, but her manner, her voice... everything about her now spoke of power, malice, and a greedy jackal-like hunger. Cavendish sucked in his head like a turtle. He spoke in moist little gasps.
"Yes, milady, and forgive my imbecility. I was just inquiring of myself what exactly the countess would report. That she had one of the books of beginning and lost it."
"That was beyond my power to control. You know that."
"Undeniable, yes, certainly undeniable. The countess is innocent. And fortunately..."
He corkscrewed 2 of his fingers and gave a ghoulish, insincere smile.
"Fortunately, our master is known for his understanding nature."
"Their master?" Kate was stunned. There was someone else, someone maybe worse than the countess. How was that even possible? She looked over and saw Emma shake her head and mouth the word, "Great."
"You think I should not tell him?" the countess said slowly.
Cavendish took an eager step forward.
"The missing book must be close, milady. You said so yourself earlier, very beautifully, one might add. And a person, even a person as dull as myself, can't help but conjecture how much better it would be to say, 'I have your prize, master,' not 'I had it,' then 'lost it.' Whoops!"
Sipping her vodka, the countess rested her head against the leather back of her chair.
"You have a point, worm. Very well. I will wait."
The man bowed even lower, as if being called worm was the highest compliment. But he continued to study her from the tops of his small eyes.
"How is it," she said quietly, "that after all these thousands of years, 3 unremarkable children should just stumble on one of the books of beginning?"
"Chance, perhaps. Simple hazard."
The countess laughed scornfully.
"There is no such thing as chance where magic is concerned. Those children are important somehow in a way I do not fully understand."
Back in the passageway, Abraham plucked at Kate's sleeve, signaling they had to leave. But Kate shook her head. She and Michael and Emma were being discussed. She wanted to hear what was said. The countess finished her drink and held out the glass for Cavendish to refill.
"And you've searched the cellar completely? This chamber the boy spoke of? The underground study where they found the book? There's no trace of it?"
"None, milady, and no evidence of enchantments hiding such a space. This chamber, if the child was telling the truth, must have been created in the future. Does Milady still believe the old man is behind this?
Of course, the Countess sneered. Who else could it be?
She tapped her fingernails against the glass, suddenly gleeful.
Imagine, once I bring our master the book, I shall be raised up higher than any other. I will rule at his side.
Cavendish dropped the carafe with a clatter onto the cart. The Countess looked up sharply.
Careful, Toad!
Yes, yes, Countess. A million thousand pardons.
He fiddled with the bottles pointlessly, knocking them against each other.
You truly are a moron, you know that? When you have something to say, say it, instead of blundering about like a drunken parlourmaid.
The man turned. He was pulling on his fingers with such force that Kate thought he might yank them free of his hands.
It is just, milady. I worry for you. Yes, I worry for you. I do.
She laughed.
For me? And why should you worry for me, you walking collection of dirt?
He shuffled close to her chair, still twisting and wrenching his fingers, seemingly unable to look her in the face.
The Countess is so beautiful and so strong, and our master, terrible and awesome as he is, has been known to be unpredictable.
The room became very still. The Countess stared at the sweating, twitchy man.
You think he will deny me my reward?
No, no, he said, glancing up quickly. I would never say that, never. But...
He put his fingers in his mouth and bit them viciously.
What would you have me do? Speak!
It's just...
He inched closer. His voice was like the hiss of a snake.
The Countess is already so powerful that I wonder, once she has the book, who then would be more powerful? The Countess or...
The Countess's hand shot out and seized the man by his stringy hair. The bird took off from his shoulder in alarm.
Are you suggesting, you miserable creature, that once I am in possession of the book, I betray our sworn master and turn its power to my own purposes?
Milady, no, never. You misunderstand.
Do I?
She gave his hair a terrific yank.
Please, mistress, I beg you. I never, never...
She smiled then, beautiful and deadly.
Calm yourself, Mr. Cavendish. I know you only mean to protect me. And in any case...
She smoothed the man's greasy hair.
I do not yet possess the book, do I?
In the damp and dark of the passageway, Kate felt a chill as she watched the man and woman look at each other, and something pass between them. Abraham pulled her sleeve again, insistent. She nodded. Every moment they lingered was dangerous. She just started to turn when the Countess said,
"Did you notice the oldest one, the girl? The book has marked her."
Kate froze.
"I wonder..."
The Countess murmured,
"Is it possible? No, it can't be."
The secretary grinned horribly.
"I know what milady is thinking. Impossible. And yet, if it were true, perhaps the Countess wishes to examine the child again. Before I entered, I took the liberty of dispatching one of the Moram Cadi to retrieve her. She should be here any moment."
Emma and Michael looked at Kate, their eyes wide with panic. They had to go, now, but before any of them could move, a scream ripped through the walls of the house. They ran, no longer making any attempt at being quiet. They heard the shrill, raised voice of the secretary, the far-off uproar in the children's room, the cries of the screechers. Very quickly, they reached what looked like a dead end. They could hear more screechers outside, circling the house. Abraham was breathing heavily.
I'll go first. You three wait till you hear me draw them off. Then run for the trees. Keep going as far and as fast as you can. Find some place to hide tonight. Come morning, head south along the river. Watch the sky. Folks say the witch uses birds as spies. A day's walk and you'll reach the lake. Any boat should take you to Westport. I'm sorry. I can't help more. You've done so much,
Kate said.
Thank you. Tell me this,
Abraham said.
Is it true you're from the future?
Yes.
And you're here to set things right?
What?
No, we just came to get Michael. You promised them kids you'd come back.
And I will, but I don't know how to help them.
For a moment, Abraham just stared at her.
Maybe not, he said finally. But you heard the Countess. There's no such thing as chance when it comes to magic. Things happen for a reason, including you being here. Now, enough talk.
Kate and Emma both hugged him. Michael hung back, still too ashamed. But Abraham put his hand on the boy's shoulder.
You made a mistake, but you're a good lad, and your sisters here love you.
Michael nodded, swallowing thickly. Abraham grasped the handle protruding from the wall. Kate could just discern the outline of the door.
Remember, run and don't look back.
And he opened the door, letting in a blast of air and rain, and was gone. Darkness again. They waited, listening to the cries outside. Emma fidgeted.
So, who do you think this master guy is? I've got a few theories,
Michael said.
Like what?
Michael paused, straightening his glasses.
I'm not quite ready to share them.
Emma gave an annoyed huff, but it was obvious she wasn't really annoyed, that she was glad things were back to how they used to be, with Michael driving her crazy.
I bet you that old man the Countess was talking about was Dr. Pym, though. You haven't seen him, Michael. He really is a wizard.
Really? Did he do any magic?
Well, me and Kate went to see him, and he made a fire just like a pier, didn't he, Kate? And I think he's got a magic pipe.
What kind of pipe?
How should I know? The magic kind, dummy.
I meant the kind you smoke or the kind you blow into.
The kind you smoke. Does being in the past make everyone stupid?
Kate kept her ear near the door so she could listen to the sounds outside, but it was hard to concentrate. Her mind kept going back to what the Countess had said. Did you notice the oldest one, the girl? The book has marked her. She thought about what had happened in the bedroom when she and Emma had been looking through photos, how she'd put her hand on the page and then watched as blackness spread across the parchment and up into her fingers. What had it done to her?
Kate, Michael touched her arm. I think Abraham's led them away.
There were shouts and commotion from the other side of the house. Kate took hold of the handle.
I'll go first. Just keep running, no matter what.
After the screecher sent by the secretary failed to find Kate and her siblings, pandemonium erupted in the dormitory. Children ran about, shouting, jumping on one another's beds. A few of the younger ones began crying. Chaos reigned for several minutes. Then the door opened, and the Countess walked in. All became very still. She waved her hand. Instantly, candles were burning along the walls. She smiled, and the children felt themselves pulled toward her.
Where are they?
Her voice was comforting, sweet. No one answered.
I'm not going to hurt them. Goodness, I want to help them. They're in great danger, please. Tell me where they went.
There was something so gentle in the way she spoke. The children would tell her everything, about Abraham, about the secret passages, about Kate and Michael and Emma. She was their friend. Where are who? The Countess looked at the boy who'd spoken. Stephen's jaw was set tight and his arms were crossed. She bent close, letting her perfume drift over him.
The three who were brought here,
two girls and a boy. Oh, you're just being silly. She brushed his hair back playfully. I know you know who I mean. They ain't here.
Yes, my love, that much I put together myself. Now, where did they go?
Stephen stared into the beautiful eyes. His fingers gripped his arms. He was fighting hard against the pull. She was the enemy. Like Abraham said, he had to show the others how to resist her. He forced a shrug. Dunno, just disappeared. One of the children stifled a laugh. The Countess looked up, her eyes flashing.
They disappeared?
Uh-huh, like magic or something.
Yeah,
another child said.
And there was a bang.
And smoke,
said a third.
With lightning.
Yeah,
we had to jump out of the way.
I see.
She'd lost them. Somehow they'd found their strength in this boy. The secretary rushed in, panting and soaked, his hair webbed against his skull.
Did you find them?
The Countess snapped. He shook his head.
Just that crippled fool of a photographer. The lout was drunk again.
The Countess said, Release the wolves. The children gasped. Even the secretary looked surprised.
Milady,
he giggled breathlessly.
Forgive me. Those beasts are not easy to control. They've been starved. Wisely, of course, makes for more eager hunters. But what's to stop them from tearing the children limb from limb?
I suppose that's a chance we'll have to take, isn't it?
She paused at the door and gestured towards Stephen.
Oh, and have that one taken to the boat.
I hate this, Emma cried as she landed face first in another puddle. I hate stupid rain. Leaving the house, they'd sprinted the short distance to the trees without seeing a single screecher. But since then, the going had been slow. The storm had turned the forest floor into a swamp, and their feet kept slipping into puddles or sliding off rain-slick leaves. Michael had fallen once, and they'd wasted precious minutes searching for his glasses. Emma had been particularly annoyed after she'd reached her hand into a mucky, nasty, wormy hole, and the missing glasses turned out to be hanging from Michael's ear. All three were soaking wet, extremely muddy, and tired. As she and Michael helped Emma to her feet, Kate wondered how far they had to go tonight. Where would be safe? Things seemed truly dismal. Then they heard the howl. It wasn't a screecher, but it came from the direction of the house. In seconds, there was a chorus of savage cries. Just as quickly, they died off. Kate said, They're coming. The children ran like they'd never run before, ignoring the heaviness in their legs, the pain in their sides. Soon, Emma had pulled away. She disappeared through a tangle of bushes. As Kate ducked under a branch, she heard her sister shriek. A second later, she and Michael had pushed through the bushes, and Kate saw for herself.
No!
They were on the edge of a cliff, looking out over a dark valley lit up by lightning flashes. It was hundreds of feet to the bottom and nothing but sheer rock walls in either direction. Kate cursed herself, remembering their first day in the orphanage and how they had gone to the waterfall and savored the dizzy, excited rush of watching the river plunge over the cliff. She should have realized where they were heading. Another series of howls from the forest. Whatever was making that noise was getting closer.
What are we gonna do?
Emma cried.
There!
20 yards away, a narrow path twisted down the face of the cliff. Kate had no idea if it went all the way down, but it was their only hope.
Come on!
The path was steep and slippery, never more than a couple of feet wide, and usually much less. It zigzagged back and forth, and the children clung to each other as their shoes slid in the mud and gusts of wind tried to pull them into the void. They descended 30 feet, 50, 75, the rain lashing their faces. Bringing up the rear, Kate kept glancing over the side, hoping the valley floor would come into view. If only they could get to the bottom, they would have a chance. They could find a cave to hide in, or...
Kate!
Emma had stopped and was pointing up the cliff.
Kate looked upward as lightning forked across the sky, illuminating the outline of an enormous wolf poised at the top. The creature let loose a howl that echoed over the valley.
"Run!"
she screamed. Any caution that remained was cast away. They raced along the path, their feet miraculously finding the bits of firm earth amid the mud. 30 more feet. 50. Kate spared a glance skyward. A half dozen of the creatures were tearing down the path at breakneck speed, headlong and reckless. As Kate watched, the pack collided at a corner. There was a yelp, and one dark body dislodged from the mass.
"Get back!"
She grabbed Emma, and the two of them and Michael flattened themselves against the rock as the flailing, snarling creature fell past, inches away.
"Okay,"
she panted, her heart pounding in her throat.
"We're okay."
"No,"
Michael said.
"Yes, we just have to hurry."
"No, look."
Kate peered around Emma to see where he was pointing, and her legs almost gave out. The path continued a few yards, then disappeared into space. Literally just stopped. She felt herself wanting to give up, to sit down and have it be done. But another, stronger voice spoke inside her and said it wasn't going to end this way. She wouldn't allow it. Squinting through the rain and darkness, she saw that the path did in fact continue, but 12 feet further on. She quickly weighed their options. The valley floor was finally visible, but it was still 100 feet straight down. Retreat was hopeless. The wolves were on the path and getting closer with every second. There was no other choice.
"We have to jump."
"Are you crazy?"
Michael yelled.
"It's the only way."
Just then a wolf let out a long, heart-shuddering howl.
"Right,"
Michael said, and he turned, took 3 steps, and leaped into the darkness. Kate and Emma held their breath as he hung in the air. Luckily, the other part of the path was lower, and he landed with a couple feet to spare, falling forward onto his hands and knees. Then the lip of the path gave way. Kate started to scream, but Michael was already scrambling to safety. Not wasting another moment, she turned to Emma.
"You'll have to jump farther. You can do it."
"I know."
Emma's eyes had a fierce, determined gleam. She crouched and took off running, kicking back flecks of mud as she threw herself into the air. Michael stood at the edge of the path, ready to catch her if she was short. Emma landed on top of him. Kate heard the thud of impact and Michael's "oomph" as they fell in a tangle. She couldn't help but be impressed. Unfortunately, the impact had caused another 2 feet of the path to crumble into space. At the top of her vision, Kate sensed movement, and without looking, she dropped to the ground. A body passed over her, jaws snapping at the air where she'd been. There was a frenzied yelping as the wolf plunged over the side, unable to stop itself. Kate stood in time to see it disappearing into the darkness below. Looking up, she saw that the rest of the pack wasn't far behind. There was no time to wait. She ran the few steps and leaped, but as she jumped, her foot slipped in the mud, and the moment she was airborne, she knew she wasn't going to make it. She stretched out her arms, but she could see Emma and Michael falling past her, screaming her name as they reached out their hands. It was just too far. But then, miraculously, an enormous gust of wind swept up the face of the cliff and pushed her forward. Her chest slammed into the path. The breath was knocked out of her. She scrabbled for a grip in the mud, but she was sliding backward, falling. Then 2 pairs of hands were pulling her to safety. A moment later, all 3 children were on their knees in the mud, holding each other, shaking with relief. Even with the rain and the wind, Kate would happily have stayed like that all night, but she knew they still weren't safe. The leap that had almost killed her would be nothing to a wolf. She pulled away and looked back up the cliff. The pack was rounding the last corner, close enough for the children to hear their harsh animal panting.
"If only I had a sword,"
Michael said. Kate seriously doubted that would have done much good, but now wasn't the time to argue.
"Help me."
She started jumping up and down at the edge of the path. The ground was soft and unsupported, and the rain had weakened it even further. Twice Kate slipped as earth fell away, but both times her brother and sister pulled her back. In seconds, the children had widened the gap from 15 feet to 18 to 20, until, by the time the first wolf launched itself into the air, there was a 25-foot chasm. And perhaps it was fear, or exhaustion, or the knowledge that if the wolf did reach them, then further flight was pretty much pointless. But the children didn't run. They just stood there, rain-soaked and mud-splattered, watching the great beast fly toward them.
"It's not enough," Kate thought. "He's going to make it."
The wolf crashed into the end of the path. The children fell back instinctively, but the animal didn't attack. Kate saw it hadn't actually made the jump. The lower half of its body was thrashing in the air as it clawed at the loose rocks and mud, its huge jaws snapping furiously. Then the creature lurched forward, heaving itself upward, its hind legs finding purchase. And just as the cry to run rose in Kate's throat, 4 feet of earth gave way, taking the wolf with it. Kate exhaled, unaware till then that she'd been holding her breath. She squinted through the rain at the 3 remaining wolves. They were crowded at the end of the path, a growling, quivering mass. She could feel their hunger, but she knew they wouldn't chance the leap.
"What's the matter, you big chickens?" Emma yelled. "Come and get us!"
The wolves spun about and raced up the path, disappearing into the darkness.
"Look at that," Emma said, turning to Michael and Kate in triumph. "They're giving up."
"Unlikely," Michael said. "They're probably looking for another way down."
"Come on,"
Kate said.
It was only another 60 feet to the bottom, and they reached it quickly. The bodies of the wolves who'd fallen lay broken on the rocks. Kate looked up the cliff, but she couldn't see the rest of the pack. She heard Emma saying that she bet Miss Crumley had planned all this, and Michael replying that he very much doubted that, and Emma saying something about Michael's head being shaped like a turnip. She shut them out and tried to think. It was raining harder than ever. They were all exhausted. She had no idea how long it would take the wolves to find another way down. The question was, should they keep running, or did they immediately start looking for a place to hide?
"Kate, let me think. Kate!"
Emma tugged on her arm. Kate turned. 30 yards away, a dark shape was moving over the tops of the boulders.
"Run!"
They broke for the trees. A growl erupted behind them. They struggled up a small rise. Every second, Kate expected to feel the weight of the animal on her back.
"Keep going," she told herself. "Just keep going."
Glancing over her shoulder, she emerged from the trees to a clearing at the top of the hill and slammed into Michael and Emma, almost knocking them down.
"Don't stop! We..."
The words died in her throat. A wolf was crouched in front of them. For a long moment, no one moved. The creature's grey fur was matted with rain. Its mouth hung open, teeth bared in a hideous grin, as a low growl emanated from its gut. Emma and Michael were frozen. It was up to her to do something. What if she ran right at it? The beast wouldn't be expecting that. It might give her brother and sister time to get away. The fact that she wouldn't survive didn't faze her in the least. Readying herself, Kate saw another wolf step out of the rain, its head low, its eyes fixed and murderous. Then a sound at her back told her the first wolf had closed the circle, and she finally understood. There was nothing she could do. They were going to die here.
"Kate,"
Emma said, her voice shaking.
"Hold hands," Kate said.
They did, standing back to back in a circle.
"Now, close your eyes,"
Kate commanded.
"Do it."
Michael and Emma obeyed. But Kate kept her eyes wide open, watching the wolves circle. This was her responsibility, her failure. She wouldn't spare herself seeing it through. She locked eyes with the largest wolf, letting it know she wasn't afraid. She no longer felt the rain whipping at her face, the fatigue in her body. Her mother flashed through her mind. "I'm sorry," Kate thought. "I did everything I could." The animal crouched low, gathering itself. Kate squeezed Emma's and Michael's hands and whispered,
"I love you,"
as the wolf launched itself into the air. The animal's teeth never reached her. There was a sound of fast, heavy footsteps, of something swinging through the rain. The wolf saw it coming and tried to change directions, but was already committed. The object, a long grey blur, was in Kate's vision for an instant. Then it struck the wolf in the head, close and loud enough for Kate to hear the creature's skull shatter. Then a man was beside them. He was huge, a giant. His long, dark hair obscured his face, and thick chains hung from either wrist. With fierce growls, the two remaining wolves threw themselves at the man. He caught one in midair and broke the creature's neck with a dull crack. The second fastened itself on the man's arm, sinking its fangs deep into his flesh. He wrenched the creature away and threw it as a normal person might a cat. It struck a boulder and fell to the ground, dazed. The man took two long strides, put his boot on the animal's neck, and stepped down. There was a thick crunch. The wolf lay still. He walked back to the children. Michael and Emma had opened their eyes and were staring up at the man with wonder. He loomed over them, his face hidden in shadow. But even so, Kate recognized him. He was the man who'd attacked the Countess that day at the dam. He said, "Come with me." Chapter 9. Gabriel. It went like this. Kate would pick out a tree or boulder, and she'd tell herself, "That far, I'll just go that far." And while she walked, she wouldn't allow herself to think about how wet and heavy her clothes were, how they chafed against her skin with every step, how the muscles in her legs had been replaced with so much unresponsive mud. She would only think, "That far, I'll make it that far." Then, when she reached whatever rock or tree she'd picked out, she'd look forward, past the giant man, through the rain and the darkness, to single out another tree or rock, and do it all again. She glanced at Michael. He had entered a state of numb, mindless plodding. His head had drooped to his chest, and water was sluicing off his nose as he put one wobbly foot in front of the other. But even so, he was doing better than Emma. She had actually fallen asleep while walking. The third time it happened, after she'd tripped and woken herself up with a, "Huh? Who did that?" The giant man had turned and scooped her into his arms. Kate had expected protests. Emma never let adults coddle her, but her sister had just curled up and gone to sleep. That left Kate, exhausted as she